Chapter 38. Darrow. Tabula Rasa. Regulus Erg Soon is a voluble, rude, insanely clever man of many layers and shifting schemes. Nicknamed Quicksilver, he is, above all else, a wary man. A decade and a half sponsoring the Sons of Ares instilled him with that virtue, if he didn't already have it before he met Fitchner. Our ship is scanned for atomics, and who knows what else, as it taxis into a hangar beneath one of the asteroid's larger craters. When the ship's door opens and the ramp unfurls, I descend alone. Severo's music trickles out behind me. Despite the cordial welcome, I expected to come out to a phalanx of automatons. Instead, Matteo waits alone. He looks out of place in the bleak hangar, better fit for the luxuries of a Venusian court or a high-profile Loonies symposium than all the way out here on the fault line between civilizations.
Darrow, my goodman, my struggler, back from the dead once more.
I thought I'd call him deserter, but I can't be angry, not at Matteo. Lorne might have taught me to kill, but Matteo was my first teacher in my life after the mines, and in many ways my most important teacher. He taught me how to be a gold. As I approach him to shake his hand, his arms go wide and he wraps his wispy limbs around my midsection. I allow my arms to encircle his shoulders, and I kiss the top of his head. His hair, darker now, smells like jasmine.
"How are you?" he asks when we part. "We've so much to catch up on."
"I'm sorry, Matteo, but I don't have time."
"You have more time than you think," he says.
I frown.
"How are you?"
"Desperate, but you know that.
Revenants usually are. The dead never come back without a reason."
His eyes flick to the craft.
"Beautiful hull. I admire the craftsmanship. But what have you done to it? It looks like a pauper's shoe sewn together with nothing but good intentions."
"Exit tax from Mercury," I say. "Harnassus fixed it best he could."
"Ghoulish work.
Well, he's a military engineer. Staples for stitches, you know."
"I meant Mercury."
His sigh is one of deep empathy.
"I cannot imagine the horrors you faced."
Matteo surveys my injured limbs, my sun-seared, turned sun-starved skin, my fresh scars. Instead of looking away, as most do, to preserve his image of the invulnerable reaper, he admires my imperfections, catalogues the wounds to understand my narrative, and then loves me all the more for them. Though I can tell he doesn't like the beard.
"I am sorry for Mercury, Darrow. That you did not get reinforcements because of the Senate's failings. I grieve for the Free Legions."
Matteo reaches up to take my face between his hands. I try to pull back. He holds on.
"I grieve for Theodora."
Something in his eyes causes me to relent. Maybe it is because he saw me in my youth, after Io died, at my angriest. Maybe because he taught me to dance when I was just a fresh-born gold colt on steroids. Maybe it's because I look at him and feel seen.
"All her life, Theodora was coveted, not valued."
"You valued her, and she loved you for it. I have never known a pink so pure in their loyalty. She was resourceful, intelligent, but most of all she found contentment in her service to you, then to the Republic as its great spymaster. True contentment melded with purpose, something that evades so many of us. She was a hero to our color. All free pinks hail her name. It was her honor to serve you, and my honor to know her." I'm taken off guard by the requiem.
"I grieve for Orion," he goes on, even though I flinch. "She was a shooting star, and it will be an age before mankind sees another one quite like her. I grieve for Alexander. I know you took him on as a debt to Lorne and grew to love him, despite seeing so much of yourself in him. He was the best gold of his generation, but he set to make himself in your image, a Red's, and he did. When the waves came for Tyche, he proved he lived for more. My voice is halting.
You know about that?
He nods. Tears fill my eyes, unbidden, unwelcome. Everything in me wishes to harden my heart against the pain. Instead, I allow the pain, and by allowing it, I honour the dead with Mateo, and feel that their light was seen. Not just by me, but by this man who knows my story and the stories of those I've cared for. That solace I thought I'd find in Severo, I find it in Mateo. I grieve for Dancer. I don't make a sound, but hearing our old friend's name on Mateo's lips makes a boy of me again. I see Dancer smoking a burner, watching Mateo and me practice gold mannerisms. I see Dancer's excitement as I chewed on the scythe card in our first meeting. His fatherly concern as I boarded the shuttle for the Institute. His fear as he choked to death on his own blood during the Day of Red Doves. I miss Dancer more now than I miss my father, more even than I miss Eo. They were a part of my first life. Dancer gave me my second.
I've never met a truer spirit than Dancer, Mateo continues. He was born a leper amongst the downtrodden and rose to become a prince of men. He was virtuous and true, the way men should be. He was stubborn, sometimes naive, but never stupid. He adored you, the boy we helped make a man. And he adored the man, too, even if he had to stand in your way sometimes.
I nod. It's all I can do.
I grieve for Severo the most.
Bad form. Severo mutters, mourning for what ain't dead yet. Mateo's eyes widen as he sees Severo marching down our ship's ramp. Apparently, Mateo and Quick don't know everything.
Sorry I'm late. Dishes to do. But we came for metal, Mateo. Not to hump, not to cry. Metal. So if you don't mind, show us to your man.
He glances at me.
One of us is in a hurry.
We enter Quicksilver's study and step onto the streets of Luna. The study itself is hidden behind a life-sized hologram. Severo mutters under his breath at the melodrama. The hologram shows a mob of low colours marching through Luna's streets, waving banners and chains. Skyscrapers and skyhooks crowd out the sky. A ship trails fire. Luna, just after the Day of Red Doves, is gripped with drunken, perverse revelry. The mob sings the forbidden song and cheers as grav bikes buzz past, dragging the tattered remains of silvers behind them. Many of the business caste wear Sun Industry emblems, but not all. I glimpse Quicksilver through the holograms. He floats over the image of the crowd. The man is stout, bold, arrogant and pugnacious as ever. He wears a black kimono embroidered with green and glowing slippers.
I thought I would take solace in the fact that they are all starving now, having traded the Republic for a cabal of maniacs, deviants, clones, bone riders, grimaces and, worst of all, socialists,
Quick says as I walk through the riot. Severo doesn't follow me deeper into the room. He remains at the entrance to the study, where he leans with his back against the wall, eyes restless and searching for danger.
I don't feel satisfaction. If anything, I feel nothing.
Quicksilver's frown is followed by a moment of silence.
Of course, I wonder what I could have done differently. Your constant refrain, I know, Darrow. Only difference between you and me is that you blame yourself, and I know who is really to blame. The mob.
He glares down at the mob as if they were ants spoiling his picnic.
"So this is what you do all day?" Severo says. "Ah, nothing like sarcasm from uninvited guests," Quick replies. "You know, with that beard you truly do look like your father, Severo. For your own safety, please refrain from any sort of violence. I didn't have to let you two aboard. Remember that." "I'm sure you'll remind us a few more times," Severo says, "when you come down from the cross."
Matteo and I share a smile. Severo and Quick have always been bastards to one another, but Quick puts up with Severo like he's his black sheep's son. He knew Fitchner since Severo was a baby and watched him grow up from afar. Severo's always carried a chip on his shoulder for the silver. Like he thinks it's unfair that the money lived and the man who did all the work, his father, died. He's not wrong, but I think he fails to notice how no one else gets away with talking to Quicksilver quite like he does. Quicksilver speeds up the scene, bored. The mob flows past and then the streets and people and their song dissolve into digital smoke. His slippers dim and he descends to the floor. Quick's study is expansive but lightly furnished. The floor is green stone. A nearly opaque window looks out at a garden. The rest of the walls are filled with screens relaying raw data. Except for one behind the desk. That wall is filled with relics of the past. Amidst ancient spears and tablets are a few items I recognize, including a black helmet with a starburst crest. Quicksilver rubs his mysterious ring with its gold eyeball at its center, the one he's worn since I first met him. I let him look me over. If Severo's his black sheep, I'm his golden son.
"Darrow." He reaches up and grips both my arms. "My boy. Gods. Mercury." He breathes out. "I'm sorry about your troops. They were patriots all, heroes. The mob doesn't deserve their sacrifice. But where have you been?"
Matteo clarifies. "We've watched the Archimedes approach since you entered the belt." I turn. They must have very long eyes. "And we know Kavak sent Cassius with that fresh hull to help you escape Mercury, but where have you been in the time between?"
"I was marooned on one of the marches," I say. "Icarus base?"
Quicksilver guffaws.
"Really? Gods, makes me nostalgic. Remember when we sent teams to build the damn thing, Matteo? How could I not? You drove the penthouse at all hours, raving that Fitchner was too bold, that the Votum would see the construction skiffs and rat us out to the Praetorians. Ah, the old days."
Quicksilver's eyes twinkle.
"That was truly a thrill. Spartan base, though. Couldn't have been pleasant."
"It was educational," I say.
"And what is it that you learned?"
"Perspective."
"Perspective, eh? You know, I once overheard Magnus our Grimace tell your old companion Rogue that losing an army will either make a man a philosopher or a suicide. Glad you chose differently than Fabii. After that, it was the dockyards of Venus."
Quicksilver and Matteo look at each other and laugh.
"That was you?"
"Technically, it was him." I nod to Severo. They frown. "So they don't know about the auction." Severo looks at me, and it's clear he doesn't want them to. He's embarrassed.
"If you knew we were coming, then you probably know why we're here. Virginia did send 5 other ships. Did any of them make it?" "No, but your wife's agent has been very clear with Matteo. She thinks the Republic's salvation lies here with us," Quicksilver says. "Does it?"
I look around the room. The data might as well be streaming by in ancient Mandarin. Can't make heads nor tails out of it. But the length of our journey with Matteo on the lift to Quicksilver's study was long enough for me to guess he's hollowed out the entirety of the asteroid. a Herculean effort. Maybe Virginia was right after all, and the asteroid is filled with dockyards and new warships. Yet, a feeling is telling me it's housing something else. But what?
Come, Quicksilver says. Let's sit if we're going to get mad at each other.
He takes us to a sunken sitting room with cushions arrayed on the floor and, dripping from the ceiling, a Neptunian rain column. It is shaped like a teardrop made from the diamonds that rain down on that distant sphere. Severo doesn't sit on the cushions with the rest of us. He perches on the rim of the sitting room and keeps watch.
Severo, come sit with us, says Quicksilver. Whatever happened to you on Luna wasn't my fault. You know that. We're friends, you and I. Let's sit and talk like it.
Severo gives him the crooks. Quick shoots me a look of concern.
Right. Well, you've had a hard run, lad. A hard run. Act as you like. You're entitled to it.
Mischief enters his eyes.
That's the way in Virginia's Republic, is it not?
If anything, she's shown restraint, I say. Especially with you.
Please. If she listened to me, the Vox would have been smashed years ago. Had she treated them with as firm a hand as she dealt with my Silvers, well, the society would be ashes, and she wouldn't have had to send her husband here to drag me back to the slaughterhouse.
I didn't come to drag you. I came to talk.
He's skeptical.
So, talk.
The Republic may not survive the year without your help, I say. Phobos has fallen to the Rim and Lysander's alliance. They may reign on the planet any day now, if they haven't already. Not to mention Atalantia is waiting in the wings, blockading Luna. Already millions have died of starvation.
We need whatever ships and weapons you have left, or our lifelong dream will die. You have reasons to be upset with me and Virginia. I have not always been the best partner, nor delivered the results I promised. I don't have the long view like Fichtner, nor the subtlety. But we started this war together, and we need to end it together. I've always had your back, Quick. I need you to have mine one last time. Give me the weapons to make this a fight.
He sips his whiskey and looks at Mateo.
Very well spoken. But who says I have weapons?
Virginia has your books, I say, from your old Logos.
An eyebrow arches toward Mateo.
Our loose end. I thought I said hire a team.
I hired three.
Well, shit. Here we are.
I press him. We know about the metal and material you've hoarded. Whatever fleet or weapons you've built in secret serves no purpose out here. I've come to ask you to lend me your ships. Let me put them to use. Give me the weapons I need to finish this war, and I will finish it.
Quicksilver sighs.
I fear we cannot do that, Darrow. Cannot or will not? Severo asks. Both, in fact.
That's not entirely true, Mateo says. Quicksilver glares at him, then smiles at me.
Listen, Darrow, it's not that I don't believe in you anymore. I asked you to move mountains, and you did. I asked you to wage a war on heaven, and you have. Shit, dead gods are in your wake, my boys. That you survived Mercury, that you found your way here.
He shakes his head with a true and unreserved admiration that I immediately resent.
Well, it's enough to make an old nihilist believe in heroes again. I believe in you, Darrow. At least that you and Severo will fight till the last. But gold is rising once more. Atalantia's forces multiply by the day. Lune, a lune I said we should kill, remember, is reawakening their dormant moral spirit and has won the Rim to his banner. Even with the recent developments, our cause is at its terminus.
Recent developments? I ask. He ignores that.
To be perfectly honest, I no longer believe the people have the will to win this. I no longer believe in the people at all, really. You never did,
Severo accuses. Matteo looks at him hard.
Oh, like you do?
Quicksilver laughs.
Say it then. Claim the people are the power of the Republic.
Quicksilver waits, but Severo just glares.
No. See, the people rely on a narrow, sharp edge. The Volk, you two, the Free Legions. The people just huddle and whine and wait.
You hate the people too, Severo. You think they're slime.
When have they ever treated you decently? When have they ever had your back? All you care about is your wife, your children. And you know what? That is fine. It's natural. Fair. But don't act like I'm worse than you. You abandoned the Free Legions, left Darrow to rot before I did.
Severo looks down in shame.
I only left after the people returned my gift of liberty on the end of a pike.
It's Mateo's turn to look down. Quicksilver leans back and puts his feet up on the rain column that, if sold, could feed 20 assimilation camps for 10 years.
Quick, you can bitch and moan all you like, but you can't hide out here forever, I say.
If Gold puts down the Republic, do you think they won't hunt you? Adelantius promised Ceres to the man or woman who brings either you or Mateo back to be her playthings. When the Republic falls, you'll be next. There's nowhere to hide, nowhere to run. A mysterious half-smile appears on his face.
What if there was somewhere to run, somewhere to hide, where Gold could never reach us, where the stain of their rule was erased from humanity, and we could start with a blank slate, a tabula rasa? Would you come and be part of that future? Would you come with me?
I hesitate.
What do you mean?
Enough toying with them. They're our friends.
Show them, Mateo says. They'll hate it,
Quicksilver says. We agreed you'd show Darrow. Show them both. They both deserve to know the war wasn't all for nothing.
Show us what? Severo asks. My dream, Quicksilver replies, and looks heavily at Severo. I will remind you that violence will not work here.
With a smile of pride, he nods toward the garden window. I stand and approach the window. Obscured as it is by the fogged glass, I cannot divine anything about the garden save that it has foliage and running water. I'd assumed it was an oxygen farm, but something in Quick's words and the faintly visible curve of the garden seems off. Then the opaque glass clears and unveils a wonder. Time stops, and I feel that I am once again stepping out from the gravlift behind Dancer to see the surface of Mars for the first time. It's not just a garden that lies behind the glass. It's an entire world. Miniature, but complete. Hundreds of varieties of trees and fruiting bushes curve along the hollowed-out interior of the asteroid, facing the small, glowing sun that floats in the center of this new world. Figures rove over the landscape in twos and threes. Children, I realize after a beat. The gravity is such that the children who run through the trees or sit in the glades taking instruction from automaton teachers all cling to the ground even as they appear upside down or sideways to me. Wherever they stand, the small sun at the center of the world is up. What is this place? I ask.
I was born too late to explore the seas, and I am too wicked to explore heaven. So the stars will have to do. This, my boy, is an interstellar generation ship. An introvert's boyhood dream that he now gets to share with his lifelong love.
Mateo takes Quick's hand. The construction and technology on display would render even Virginia speechless, but that's not what forms the lump in my throat. There is something strange about the children. I pick out the closest. A girl running from the others through a glade of young Martian god trees. The girl is olive-skinned and around 6 years old. Her hair and eyes are brown, and her hands smooth and blank. Without sigils.
You see, boys, it's not gold that's the problem. Not entirely, at least. Even if we kill them all, their work will endure. The colours are the problem. The hierarchy itself, and those children down there, our children, they are not gold, not red, not blue, nor green. They are Homo sapiens, and they deserve to inherit more than the sins of our world.
Not a shipyard or a fortress, Severo whispers. It is a life raft.
You're abandoning us.
He stands and trembles with rage.
You don't have ships. You spent all the metal on this... this!
All three of us watch and wait for Severo to explode. The hair on my arms rises. Severo's must too. He turns and sees half a dozen malevolent red eyes staring back at him. I can't see what the eyes are attached to, but I sense their mass and danger. Severo's lips curl. I don't think he was going to fight, but seeing how fruitless it would have been, he grows so angry his trembling stops. He turns back to Quicksilver.
36 days. 78 by the time we're back.
Tears glisten in his eyes.
You saw us coming. You could have sent a message.
His voice catches.
You two ain't fathers. Those ain't your children. You're cowards playing gods. Rot out there. Rot and die, golds.
Then he walks away. The helplessness of his rage breaks my heart. That rage was our fuel in the beginning, our lifeblood. We learned that together long ago. It will not help us now. Forgetting is essential to learning, just as exhaling is essential to breathing. I look back on the garden and breathe. This path is blocked, and no amount of pushing will help. This place have a name.
We call it the Tabula Rasa.
Why don't you show me your new world then, old friend? I ask.
Help me to understand.